Welcome to the DBS Films Podcast, a behind-the-scenes look into making indie films. Learn from DBS Films about their process, tips, and fun stories that all come with making multiple movies a reality.
Hey everybody, welcome to DBS Films Podcast. My name is Kellen, with me as always is my brother Brendan, and together we make movies with DBS Films. In this episode, we're going to hop into part two of a scene-by-scene breakdown of The Devil in the Room. Basically, the first episode that we had highlighted the first half of it. Kind of the gist of where we're at is, you know, overall concept is kind of there, a little bit out of our budget range, execution not so much there. But again, with the haunting of the murder or the haunting of the Morgan estate and the devil in the room, we see a lot of the same issues because we didn't get through that editing process with it. So, you know, before we hop into this episode, Brendan, do you want to kind of mention, you know, just how it can be a little bit frustrating now? Because basically, you know, the outline's there. We just didn't have the tools. And more importantly, why, again, this is why you need to finish your movies, because it, you know, highlights exactly what you need to do differently.
Yeah, it's always interesting, you know, when you go back and we look at these movies, because they're both way worse than I thought they would be, and also they're better than I thought they would be. Obviously, I think that with just a few small little changes that we understand now from a screenwriting perspective, we can make these movies a lot better, which is just the power of uploading a final product. You have the ability to take a top-down view and make small little changes. And sometimes the difference between a bad movie and a good movie is just a few small little scene changes or small little plot devices that need to be changed, or just adding some spice to the story. And a lot of our movies, a lot of The Hateful Eight, there's a lot of potential there, but we just kind of missed it on a screenplay aspect. I think for this one's extra frustrating for me because we had done 8 movies. We should be better than this. And a lot of it was just a lot of production mistakes. We suffered from audio issues. We suffered from not having the coverage. This movie only came in at an hour long when it should have been an hour 20, which means we had to cut a lot of stuff that we probably didn't want to cut at all. We just had to do it to get this movie completed. So, you know, looking back on this, I think that's the biggest frustration thing. We made 8 movies. I don't like this screenplay. I think the movie has a lot of potential. The way we went about it was the wrong angle, but it's a learning experience. When you're writing a script, there's always going to be 10 to 15 different ways you could take this story. And really picking the one direction that you want to go in, which is obviously the one that you think is going to be the best direction, I think that just comes from experience. It comes from writing a lot of screenplays, uploading a lot of movies, and understanding is like, all right, look, I could go this way, but I've gone that direction before and it hasn't worked out. So let's try a different way. So like, if I were to get this script again, if someone came to me with the Devil in the Room idea, I'd definitely go in a little bit of a different direction. I'd really cut down on a lot of drama and I'd make this more of a, you know, a nonstop horror thrill ride where it hits in the intro and it just goes all the way through. You get Gubo earlier in this movie and it really gets you along that main path of this is a sleep paralysis demon coming after you. You know, how are you going to get yourself out of this situation?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I agree with the frustrations as well, too, just because this is, I mean, I love this story. I've talked about it before. It's my favorite of The Hateful Eight. I just love the concept so much that all of the imperfections, you know, can easily fade away from me. But when we go with a scene-by-scene breakdown, then I'm like, oh, man, those are a lot of imperfections. So we are picking up right now our main character, Amanda. She has just talked to the therapist, and she has gotten her sleeping aid to help her go to sleep. But she just noticed in the journal that her sister was seeing the same thing she was seeing. Very spooky, very, very edging. I think it does a great job in solidifying it. She takes her pill, and then we go ahead and we see a one Frank the Demon come back in. It's actually pretty bright. It's like a blue, like it's a little bit brighter than that. I mean, he kind of gets shadowed quickly, but again, we don't want to show much of Frank. He gets close there. He looks at Isaac, and then we get a gore insert scene that we've picked up and filmed. I will actually say the later half of this movie, due to the scrapping that we did to essentially fix it, it does pick up a lot more. So this was one of our most vicious scenes in the sense of it shows Isaac basically getting his guts ripped out. And then you have Amanda waking up and she's freaking out. So what are your thoughts on this scene? I mean, to me, this was supposed to be the definition of this movie, which was like sleep paralysis. You know, people think sleep paralysis is terrifying. We only did it really once. And like, we didn't even really kind of highlight it. Like, it didn't show like her trying to move herself or anything like that. Frank just kind of walks in there and then rips Isaac's guts out.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good scene. I think it should have been done earlier in the movie, though. This is a, you know, really solid movie to show you this is a horror movie. It's a sleep paralysis movie. And she's not in control of herself when she dreams. And there's, like, physical consequences, as in, like, this thing's killing Isaac. And obviously, you know, she wakes up and it didn't kill him. But like the implication is there that when she does go to sleep, when she goes to this dream world, bad things could happen. And you just have the Gubo character come in and say, hey, if you get in the right state and these bad things happen to you in your dream world, then they will kill you in real life. It's so similar to like what happens in the Matrix. When you die in the Matrix, you die in real life. So, you know, we just needed to do this earlier. And then the main problem with this movie is just, or this scene is just the production value is off. Yeah, you're pulling guts out of this guy, but it's clearly not him. You know, there's different ways to do this that I think now we would have done a lot better. But it just comes from experience. But I think that if this movie, this one was done at maybe the end of the first act to really get you invested in this movie, to show you the stakes are life and death. I think you would have had a better, the viewer would have been more engaged in this movie. Because really up until this point, oh, it's just like spooky dreams. Like there's no, everyone has spooky dreams. There's no real stakes to, you know, why this is actually happening. So what if she has a nightmare? It doesn't affect her. It doesn't affect Isaac. It doesn't affect anyone. You know, just kind of, you know, learn to deal with your sleep problems, lady, is pretty much like what we're getting. But if this was done earlier and you're showing the audience that there are life and death stakes at this, and then you have Gubo saying, be careful with this because if this guy kills you in your dreams, then you die in real life. You know, would be a big thing. And I mean, like, just look at like Nightmare on Elm Street. How they address this is they do it immediately. Someone dies in their dream and then, you know, they wake up and they're dead. And I think that's what this is missing. The stakes of this movie, other than the sister killing herself, which is, I mean, it kind of makes sense, but it's not really like super clear why she killed herself. Very ambiguous. So, you know, your viewer right now does not know the stakes. They don't understand the rules of the game because we haven't even explained the rules of the game yet, because that's coming, you know, in a few scenes down the road. So it's just a screenwriting, pacing kind of issues right now with this movie. But I mean, production could have been a little better on this. But I mean, that's just, I think that's the story with this whole movie is it was just a little bit off. The meat and potatoes are there. The order and how we actually convey this information to the audience is just, we suffer from a lot of amateur filmmaker mistakes.
Yep, completely agree with that. You know, these are the mistakes that the only way to learn about them is to go through them. So, you know, they wake up. We have basically another scene. It's, I mean, honestly, you know, Sky and Isaac, they're currently, I think they're married now, but there were a couple there. So they have really good chemistry when it comes to, you know, being on set. So they did really good job. He's like, I'll stay away for you again, earning the title of best DVS boyfriend, which is really not that hard. But we get, you know, again, this is really, you could take the Morgan estate, you could take the devil in the room, and you could just draw what scene is what, because what we have now is the montage scene. So she's sitting there under a purple light for some reason, because purple, I guess, is interesting. And she goes ahead and she basically does the research, figures out that there is some type of demon. And more importantly, she finds potentially a one Arnold Gubo here. So it kind of is the first mention that there might be something there. Really, from there, she doesn't take much out of it. She goes to the next day. The next day, she is chopping the food. And this was something that the reason I like this concept is because once you do have a budget, I think it's a really easy way to keep the budget actually low. It does need to hit a threshold, but you can do very easy things like this, which is she basically is chopping the cucumbers and she's dozing off. She's dozing off. She chops her finger, which is the scare that we did. And then it goes back and her finger's still there. So basically the blurring with reality. Now, the finger chop was a complete pickup that we had to do, but I think it's actually done really well. So I think the montage is done really well. I think the finger chop is done really well. So, you know, of the movie, we're starting to pick up some steam. So what do you think about those two in combination?
I mean, I think if you just move that scene that I just talked about to the first third of this movie, and then after that scene, she's scared to go to sleep and she starts to experience this, what would it be called? Like when you're starting to see things while you're awake. So you're kind of awake, but you're still dreaming. And I've experienced this after coming home from, you know, 24 hour sets, driving home, you kind of like doze off a little bit and it's very scary. It's kind of a blending of sleep and reality and really easy way to do a lot of cool scares. You got Frank show up. She could be seeing things. She chops her finger off. All this stuff is really, really cool. It just needs to be done, you know, earlier in the movie. So I think that's the whole thing, just moving all this stuff up, getting Gubo in this movie forward. Like I said, getting on the main storyline, the main track that you're trying to go as quickly as possible is really the goal of any kind of indie film. This is not a 2 hour, 2.5 hour slow burn movie. This is one that's going to get you going from start to finish. And that's what you need to do. You need to get on this train and get it moving and just get it to its destination, which is the climax, as soon as possible.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you cut out that whole middle chunk or the early chunk that we talked about, then yeah, you're really moving. So she does the finger chop scene and then she takes it for real that she needs to go see a one Mr. Arnold Gubo. And the thing is, I mean, yeah, you say he's the strongest character. Well, we don't see him until 37 minutes, which is literally like 70% of the movie's over. So we have Gubo, which... You know, I think his scenes are pretty good in the sense of like it going back and forth and being active. I think at this time, I think we're getting a little tired because, I mean, I know it took a while to get that scene done, but you can kind of see, you know, a little bit of her being exhausted for real. So it kind of plays through in that sense. But I think Gubo does a great job of, I think Gubo's dialogue clearly highlights what I think good indie dialogue is, in my opinion, which is it's right to the point. You know, it's like, did this happen? Oh my gosh, shock and surprise. Did this happen? Okay, this is what it exactly is. And I think these characters, essentially Gubo is, you know, you could say it's either the friend from the Morgan estate or potentially Jake, but basically they're warning, you know, one side, the other side is kind of it, you know, in the sense of it. While I would say in the Haunting of the Morgan estate, it's more kind of both of them saying, hey, this is a warning just for you. This is kind of like, what choice do you do? Do you listen to Gubo? Do you listen to the therapist? So overall, yeah, I think Gubo is a great character. And, you know, like you were saying, it seems like you really do like
him. Yeah, no, I think he's definitely the best character. It's a shame that it takes us 40 minutes to get into this hour-long movie and show him. And I think, like, you know, what you said, I agree with. I think that the way he delivers dialogue in kind of a frantic, crazy way is the best way to do it. It's just engaging. He's an interesting character. He looks really cool. And he's saying this crazy stuff. He's got to be in the first third of this movie. Like, he really does. I think you just replace him and put or replace the therapist with him. I think you got a better movie. And I think it's... You know, he's the one that could really guide this movie and explain the lore of the movie, because we're really only explaining this lore 40 minutes into this movie. This whole thing should have been done in the first 15 to 20 minutes, honestly, because then people would have been like, all right, cool. So when I see Frank come in doing these crazy sleep paralysis things, number one, I know the stakes that she could actually die. And number two, I know the rules, like he only affects you in the dream world. And we could bring in those the blinking glasses, which are only brought up at the end. And I think they're actually a really cool thing. And they're only brought up once. So then at the end, people were confused with the end. They didn't understand what was going on. So once again, like just looking at this from a top-down perspective, we made a lot of screenplay issues. There's a lot of production issues. But I think with just small little tweaks, you can actually have a pretty good story here.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just got to speed it up. And then, I mean, I like a movie about Gubo is definitely going to be interesting. So you have that little dialogue. Then she goes and she burns the idol. And the idol magically comes back, or she basically throws the idol into the fire, which is designed what to do. I mean, honestly, the idol, like, it's just lukewarm with like kind of how it's there, how it's discovered, all of those things. But she does that, and while she's doing that, basically the idol calls to her and she reaches her hand out and she almost gets burned. So then the boyfriend comes in and saves her. Lukewarm, but like structure plot wise, I think it's a great idea. Like, I mean, for an indie movie with a low budget, like that's a great way to do it. You know, fire is interesting. You almost burn yourself. There's a dynamic there. You increase the stakes. Now it shows she's even more crazy because things are really going down. Are you going to believe that she actually has a demon from Gubo? Well, what's going on here? So I think the transition is really good in this scene. So you want to talk about this before we hop into detail on the second therapist scene?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the totem. So I understand what we were trying to do. Like the object needs to be there so that Frank can come and go after this girl. And my first instinct would be like, all right, just scrap that. But then it's like, all right, why is Frank possessing her? Like, how do you get rid of Frank? So I see why the totem's there as far as like the logic. But this is one thing like right now in this movie that I don't know how to make better. And I don't think that the totem was totally, you know, given the best room to, you know, be a good plot device or just a good object. It just wasn't, you know, done properly. But even if, you know, with what we have, I don't know how to make it better. So I'd say, like, looking back on this movie, the totem is something that I just would have to put more brain power into to try and figure out, like, how do we make this more engaging? Because it really is just a plot device to make sure that, all right, this is the reason that Frank keeps showing up. And I know we wanted to have that cool little twist where she goes and she burns it and then it just shows back up. And in the end, it's like, all right. And I think that's like what you're saying with the totem is just, it's just okay. It doesn't really add anything. So I'm wondering if there's a way we can get rid of the totem or replace it with something else or replace it with some kind of other lore that's just like a little bit more spicier, that just brings more depth to the story, as opposed to having this, I think it's like a weird little African sculpture just hanging around the house, pretty much being invincible.
Yeah. Again, you know, we're trying to increase the stakes, increase the tension here. I think it's a great way of doing it. And now we go back to the second therapist scene, which is exactly the same as the first therapist scene, but somehow much worse. Like, we cut out so much of it. But again, it was just really the layout, the cuts back and forth. There's not too much motion. It's really tight. So it's like you're just kind of talking head. Therapist does a great job, I would say. But like, man, this is an example. If you watch this one, I would say, and then kind of like in just in our later scenes, you know, specifically like even the murder house where like they're like, this is the final consequence scene right here, realistically, for the therapist. So like the level, the hype here, like, I mean, and again, just thinking over here, like I would say like Baker Act would be kind of like questioned, you know, things like that, like to kind of maybe intense it up more, things like that. But it just, so again, you know, I like the structure of it, but execution here is probably the biggest miss of kind of the movie. If you had to look at like a specific scenes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I didn't like the first therapist scene. I don't like the second one. And I think that this would have been more impactful with Gubo, who's like, hey, you know, this is the climax. These are the rules of the climax. Like I would have just had this whole scene where he comes and, you know, runs to our house, which I thought was actually a really good scene, but he really never, like, we never have the Jake by the lake in this one, which is weird because, you know, we just did it so well in the last movie. There's no one saying, hey, don't do this. If you actually go to the dream world, you know, you're gonna die. And I think Gubo kind of does it, but it's never really clear because it's such a frantic scene. So, I mean, going to the climax in every single movie, this is a big advice for any kind of indie filmmaker. You want to make sure that the audience is completely clear on what's going to happen in the climax. The rules of the world that you built are completely clear. The objective that the main character is trying to accomplish is extremely clear. The consequences of their actions, if they are not able to get that final like goal completed, the stakes of like what's going to happen to them if they fail need to be clear. And this is how you build a really good climax. And we never really did that. We kind of did with the therapist, like saying, don't trust Gubo. And then Gubo kind of being like, don't do this with the totem showing up. He's like, if you take the pills, you're going to go into dream world. But because it's from two people done in a very frantic pace, it just was kind of lost. And I don't think people were confused with this one like they were with like Into the Forest or some of our earlier movies. But I don't think it was as clear so that when she does actually end up in the dream world, when she goes to sleep, that should be like a, oh, like here we go kind of thing. Like I always remember in the Mike Flanagan when he did like the Shining 2.0 movie and he's driving up the cliff to go see, you know, the Overlook Hotel again. And they're blasting that music. I'm just like, oh, all right, here we go. Like I know exactly what's going to happen in this climax. Unfortunately for Mike, it didn't really work out that well. But you know, that's what you need to build. You need to know, your audience needs to know exactly, you know, what's going on. And I just don't think we really kind of got that.
Yeah, I think it is clear. I will say that we have the Jake by the leg, but like you were saying, it's split up into two people and you basically have to piece it together. Whereas the Jake by the leg was like, listen, this is exactly what the plot is. And I also think, you know, the lead in the Morgan estate was a lot more, you know, she was figuring things out, where man is just kind of like slowly like navigating or attempting to navigate through this whole process. So I think those are kind of the difference, but I think the overall structure of having someone say something in the sense of, you know, basically the therapist is like, if you don't take these pills, you're going to die. And then Gubo is like, if you take these pills, you're going to die. So I think it does kind of clearly do the stakes, but you don't really know that process. So I can see where you're mentioning that. So she gets home, she gets a call from Gubo, is like, what are you doing? And she's like, stop calling me, you're such a jerk. And then she looks back, she's like, the idol's here. And he's like, oh my goodness. So like, what's crazy with this one is Amanda like goes back and forth from like team Gubo, team therapist, team Gubo. So after this point, she's like, okay, I'm gonna throw up the pills. So she pukes the pill that she just, or no, the Isaac's like, hey, you need to take these pills. She takes the pills to make him feel better. And then he leaves to go on his bar exam trip. And she goes ahead and she throws up the pills. She makes some coffee and whatnot because Gubo is coming to help her. So let's get through all those downbeats, kind of like the back and forth of it. I mean, again, I think it's not poorly executed, but I think it could be condensed.
Yeah, so I think I like it. I think you need to have like the angels on the shoulder where it's like, all right, take the pill, don't take the pill, you know, do this and do that. And they're opposite sides of the spectrum. You have your main character stuck in the middle. Cause then when you have the crazy guy, which is Gubo, and it turns out that he's actually right, it's kind of like a cool plot twist. I think the issue with this is not the right movie to really do this. You only have an hour and 20 minutes. And I think we would have been much better just focusing on, you know, the plot of this movie and moving it forward and focusing on the real meat and potatoes, which is Frank and her sleep paralysis and her struggles. I think a lot of indie filmmakers, you know, fall into this pitfall of making just this giant story. And is the angel and demon on your shoulder, the two different sides of, you know, a plot, a good thing? Yes, I think it's really cool for a 2 hour, 2.5 hour movie. I think for, you know, what we're doing on this scale, just really hone in on like what the main part, the coolest aspects of this story, because an hour and 20 is not a lot of time. And you really need to just focus on this stuff you know, at the beginner level. And if you can master just the basics of just having a concept, starting the concept, explaining the rules of that concept properly, and finishing with a climax that everybody understands and feels satisfying, then that's the first level of filmmaking. I think it took us, you know, 8 movies up until The Girl on Camera 13, Murder House, Shapeshifter, Night into the Forest. I think those 4 movies really kind of solidify the foundation of storytelling. This is us just telling the foundation, the bare minimum. And I think The Hateful Eight, the first 8 movies that we did, never really got to that point. And I think that's the first step of storytelling, is to really just be able to tell a basic story first. Because then the next step is, all right, how do we add like a little bit of spice? How do we add a little bit extra layers of dimension, layers of this onion, is really kind of like what you're trying to do. And that just comes from experience. But you're never going to get better if you cannot even just lay that foundation and just take a simple concept from start to finish where your audience is satisfied.
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to be the tough part. And again, keep it simple, because, okay, great, you might be able to write a complex plot and you might be able to actually execute it on the screenplay, but are you going to even be able to film that? And, you know, as we've seen here, a lot of the issues is with the execution. So we have the coffee montage, which is good. This is really, in my opinion, where the movie just kind of falls off into the abyss, just because the climax needs to be so critical. She needs to be like daydreaming, like seeing all this stuff, seeing Frank there. And he really only pops out once. She appears on the TV, which was honestly a cool trick, but like, does it do it justice? So like, it's really, really weak there. Do you just want to talk about how we, in my opinion, I think we missed in the suspense? Like, this should have just been bombarded of pop scare, and it was just 2 lukewarm ones, and then Gubo runs in.
Yep. So here's the structure of how you did this movie. First third of the movie is her struggling to sleep. Second third of the movie is, or the second act essentially, is her not wanting to go to sleep and starting to micro sleep. So she's starting to see things. She can't tell the difference between reality and sleep. Then the last act of this movie, up into the climax, is her actually, you know, have her world is mending or molding or combining with Frank's world, where he can actually affect her. And it needed to have him moving around, attacking her. He is now a viable threat in her world, and he's coming after her. And that just was never there. The television scare, I mean, I really want to do one of these scares. We haven't been able to do it yet, where the TV just turns on. I think it would work really well. People love the radio. I see no reason why they wouldn't like the television. And I think, yeah, I agree with you. Like, you're hitting the climax. This has to just go from 0 to 100, and it needs to be pretty much 100 all the way through for the last 15, 20 minutes. This movie is probably at a 100 for maybe 3 minutes. So you can kind of see like what I talked about with, you know, making sure the audience is satisfied. If they've been with you for this whole hour, you know, you have to put that last 15 to 20 minutes as your climax. It has to be satisfying for them. You have to have a good, satisfying climax. And I think we did a really good job in Cabin 13. I think we did a really good job in Murder House. And I think we did a really good job in Shapeshifter. I think all 3 of those, the audience is rewarded for sticking with this movie. So it's just something you need to realize as an indie filmmaker, that the climax is probably one of the most, the intro and the climax are the most important parts of your movie, and you have to give them time. The biggest problem with this movie is we saved the climax for last, and we didn't really know what we were trying to do, and we ran out of time. We had to cut it short. So it's just almost like a montage of just scares. There's no real structure to it. There's no real flow to it. It's just, you know, TV scare, Frank popping up, her going under, cabinets opening, Frank popping up, and it's just, you know, a mess is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, and I will say that's kind of the overall plot that I had, in the sense of like it moving and you know, basically going from dream world to her world and mending from there. So It's there, just again, very poorly executed. So we have Gubeau show up and he kills it again. Runs in there, does like a little slip and slide. He's got like a pill. I remember the it being Frank handing her with, again, how does he hand her a pill? Who cares or who knows? I still like that. I think that's clever. I'm going to continue to say that's cool. But I think this is, again, you know, any scene that Gubeau's in really kind of nails it. So that really highlights it. And now this is, again, one of the biggest issues that we had with the movie, which is just the final climax. So it was really rushed. We lost time. We had to get through it, much like any indie production. Do you want to just talk about climaxes real quick and how they're incredibly critical, and just make sure you plan time for it. Don't wait for the last thing, because I think this was a case where we related to the last day for the climax, and surprise, surprise, we basically had to do a whole series of pickups just to salvage it.
Yeah, I would say definitely plan your climax on day two or three. I think day three is probably a good time for your climax, because your actors will get used to each other and you're ramping up, especially for me as a DP. It takes me a little bit to get going, to get comfortable with what I'm trying to do. And I know it sounds kind of weird, but it just does. You have to get in a flow. And I think we did Shapeshifter on day three. I think it worked out really well, because if you do it earlier in the movie, people are not going to be tired. They're going to be ready to give it their all. They're going to get excited. If you have the opportunity to get it completed and it looks good, then it builds momentum. Everyone gets really excited because, you know, the climax is a cool part of the movie. But the most important thing is, if it doesn't work, or if you need extra shots, or if you need to pick up something, then you have the opportunity to do so. If you save your climax for the end, then you're racing against time and you're always going to be short time. And it's just going to be difficult to, you know, give it the time and attention that it needs to really, once again, satisfy your audience. And we did the climax at the end, the Morgan Estate, and it was kind of cheap and quick. And honestly, we saved the Morgan Estate climax with a whole bunch of pickups. Devil in the Room, it was cheap and quick. And, you know, honestly, this one, we saved the movie with a whole bunch of pickups. So don't do that. I know for Girl in Cabin 13, we dedicated a whole night to doing the climax, and it turned out great. Murder House, we shot most of the climax. It was close to the end of the movie, but we had a lot of those sequences done already as far as like the special effects, the bigger stuff. So I wouldn't consider that being done the last night. I think it was just the easier stuff of her tracking around with the night vision camera. And then we had Kel in the van, which is on a whole nother day. And with Shapeshifter, I think we did it on like day three. And I plan on doing it on day two or three for the Into the Forest movie. And that's just what you have to do. If you save the hardest part for last, you're going to be in trouble. I know it's very easy to say that. You always want to put it off. And it's almost like I'm back in like high school or middle school or something, where you save the hard projects and the assignments to the last minute. But man, if you do that on a set, you're screwed. There's no coming back from that. Your movie's not going to be good. Do the hard stuff first, and then you kind of like slowly go down that mountain. It's an easier walk. And I think that builds momentum. When you can go to your actors and your team and say, hey, look, guys, we completed all the hard stuff. It's easy stuff from here on out. I think everyone kind of relaxes a little bit and you get a better performance.
So yeah, I think, you know, really the major issue is what ends up happening is you have to cut from scenes. And if you don't, the last scenes you have is the finale, you're going to cut from the finale. So to me, it's really just, you know, you have this movie with this powerful sleep demon and it just is so lukewarm. So the finale itself starts at like 52 minutes again. So like an 8-minute finale, we already have cuts of the bathroom all smoked up and like bloodied, which added a good extra 15 seconds there. So that's already adding to our pickups. Another shot. That's a pickup right there. I would argue we probably have half as much pickups as we do normal shots that we have here, because we had to basically get there. They come confront themselves and they basically go, hey, you know, I need you to leave, whatnot, and then they disappear. So really it's kind of like a 5-minute scene there. I think this is the textbook reason why I think this movie is an issue, which is we just like this finale needed to be like, you know, almost like a Matrix Neo thing where like she's like, this is my dream, I have the power, and anyone who's had like a lucid dream and you understand what you're doing, you get to do whatever you want. That's what needs to basically happen. And I mean, a conversation between her and her sister, to me, that was just like the indie way out. So that's kind of all I have to say about the finale, other than the fact that, you know, we duct taped it together and that was absolutely amazing in that process. But yeah, man, if I watched this finale after watching this movie, I'd be like, that's it.
Yeah, I think that sums it up. I think it's like, that's it. But it's like, my biggest issue with this movie is this relationship guilt thing with her sister is so dramatic. It's just ridiculous. And I hate it. I absolutely hate it. And the fact that it ends with her having this speech saying, why didn't you pick up this phone? That's the reason I died. Number one, just like, that's a, I know she's dead, but come on, ghost girl or dream sister. Don't tell that to your other sister. That's kind of mean. And number two, like, I don't know. It's just so dramatic. And I don't know why I hate on CW and Hallmark movies, but this just felt like it. I think both Politician and or the Morgan Estate in this one felt like CW Hallmark movies to me. And I think obviously that's completely my fault. Like, this is just, you know, I think part of the learning experience is to figure out, you know, what you like and what you like directing and like what you like doing, and figure out stuff that you don't like to do. And this is firmly in the file of, I didn't like doing this stuff. But like Kel said, I don't think we had another way to really kind of, you know, push this through. And I remember when we were brainstorming ways to feel guilt, because that's the core concept, the core theme of this movie was guilt. You know, we had a whole bunch of ways, and I think we just kind of settled on one that was just not, you know, the best one to do. So I think that's just an overall arcing plot issue with this, but I don't know. I didn't like the guilt sister thing with the cell phone. I didn't like it. The fact that this whole issue is caused by her not picking up the phone while she's sleeping, it was just like, felt like a cop out to me. And then instead of like having this crazy climax scene where you have all this action, you know, you're sitting here talking to your sister and it's just like, oh my goodness. So if I watch this for an hour, if I was just a regular horror view and I saw this, I'd be like, oh man, like, what is this? And this, I see it all the time in indie movies though. You see like this crazy dramatic scene. So it's not like we're doing something like out of this, you know, that not a lot of other people do as far as like a mistake. This is super common. And it's like, oh, it's the, like the overall theme of this movie is guilt. Like, you just don't get it. No, I get it. It's just not good. So like, I mean, I made that mistake and, you know, I own it. I can see it and I know how to do it. You know, again, and props to people who want to make a movie like this, who want to make like a guilt movie and that's the theme and it's struggle and loss. Man, you go do you. Like, that's totally fine. I'm just saying from my experience, this is something that I don't want to do. I don't like this. There, can it be good? Yeah, great. It could be absolutely fantastic. I just don't like it. So that's just me. It's my style and I made a mistake and hopefully I'll never do it again.
I think that'd be much appreciated by everyone else out there watching these movies. So with that being said, we have one last scene. And the reason I kind of like this scene is, to me, this was the major spark. We talk about it, you know, with like the haunting of the Morgan Estate. It was the reveal of the boyfriend. With this one, I think the one that really got us going was the idea that, you know, you have these little lights that let you know if you're in the dream world. She defeats Frank. She gets out of it. She's good to go. And then all of a sudden the lights flash and she woke up and she thought everything was happy and nice and whatnot. It turns out she's still in the dream world. So I like that little epilogue of a twist. I think that's actually good there too. But like, I think this is a point where, like, you know, after you watch that finale, you can't really salvage it there. So you have any thoughts on that last little twist we throw in there? Is it on a scale of 1 to M. Night Shyamalan, where are we at?
Are we talking about the Sixth Sense or like Avatar?
We'll go with Sixth Sense.
All right, we're pretty far off that. I thought it was cool. I like this twist. I think it's cool. I always like the twist where it's like, oh, you think you finally did all this stuff and you're happy and everything's good, and no, it's not. So honestly, out of this whole movie, the coolest concept is this little twist. And I think we started with this twist, sort of like what we did at the Morgan Estate. We just So you have this cool twist, which is 1% of the movie. The other 99% is just hot garbage. So I'd love to do again. I think that this kind of twist can be done in a lot of different movies, a lot of different stuff. I think we just need to learn how to execute on it, and we need to get better. But this is something that, you know, when you do it and it works well, and I think it's cool, we just kind of put it off in a folder of things that we did well. And this could be done in a lot of movies, especially movies that are like psychological thrillers that kind of mess with your mental psyche. And especially with reality is, you know, something we can do. And I definitely want to revisit it. I think you just have to have a good movie leading up to this to really get it impactful. And I think because we did cheap stuff all the way through this, we were kind of messy with the rules of the actual story. And the fact that, you know, we just had this crazy dialogue with the sister that's highly dramatic. And that was like really the climax. That was how she really defeats Frank. Like, come on, Brendan. Like, what are you doing here? I think that was the issue. So can it be done? Yes. Is it cool? Yes. Do we do it well? No.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, it is one of those things where it's like, cool, you get to the very finale and it could have been the greatest twist ever, but you're still like, what is this? So overall, it's going to go ahead and wrap us up for The Devil in the Room. Next, we will be doing The Girl in Cabin 13, which I'm really looking forward to because, again, these two movies are in a tranche of together. We didn't get them uploaded. We went through an entire nightmare of an editing process that made us so much better that when we wrote the script for The Girl in Cabin 13 and we went to production, we're like, we're not doing this again. We're not going through this process again. So very excited for that process. Again, be sure to go ahead, take a look at our movies online. The Haunting of the Murder House, The Girl in Cabin 13, and Into the Forest are all free on Tubi. You can also take a look at our Discord channel. That's a place to be if you want to be in our movies, if you want to be part of the action, because we make movies for our fans, with our fans. So we appreciate getting to know all of our amazing audience out there, and we really want to keep at it. So until then, have a good one.